Africa.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young, and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The Olympics. Many athletes would give up anything to go to the games and have their chance to be top in their sport in front of millions of fans and billions watching around the world, even if that means skipping other chances to be a champion. And some of the world's biggest athletes are doing just that. Now, three of the biggest names in men's tennis, Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, and Andy Murray, have announced that they're skipping the upcoming Rogers Cup tournament in Toronto, Canada, in order to save up strength for the Olympics. And each has a good reason. Murray, who will represent Great Britain, is just coming off a victory at the championships at Wimbledon and is looking to defend his gold medal from the London 2012 Olympics. Nadal, who will represent Spain, is still recovering from a wrist injury that forced him to withdraw from both the French Open and Wimbledon. And at age 34, Federer, representing Switzerland, says he needs more time to recover after his semifinal run at Wimbledon. Similarly, two stars in the sport of cycling, the UK's Mark Cavendish and Australian Rowan Dennis, have both pulled out of the Tour de France, one of cycling's most prominent competitions, with just four stages left in the race. Their reason? More time to rest up for Rio. But for others, one potential moment on the medal podium isn't worth the potential of lifelong health risks. And we've talked in previous shows about the world's top four male golfers, Jason Day of Australia, Dustin Johnson, and Jordan Spieth of the United States, and Rory McIlroy of Northern Ireland. They're all skipping the Olympics because of their fears over the Zika virus. This week, several other athletes added their names to that list. Seventh-ranked Canadian tennis player Milos Raonic, who just went to the men's singles finals at Wimbledon, is pulling out of the games. So is the eighth-ranked male tennis player Tomas Berdych of the Czech Republic, and fifth-ranked female Simona Halep of Romania. And even Lindsey Vonn, a Winter Olympian known for her success on the ski slopes, says she won't attend the games as a correspondent because of her health concerns. Now, this should I stay or should I go question isn't being considered just by the world's superstar athletes. The same question is being asked among athletes around the world, including some in Zimbabwe. Now, that country is sending its largest number of athletes ever to an Olympics this year, including their women's soccer team, who are going to the Olympics for the first time ever. But the team nearly decided to forgo that opportunity, threatening to quit over lack of information about the Zika virus. As Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, officials in Zimbabwe say that despite the risk, they're convinced by a recent Centers for Disease Control report that athletes headed for Rio are safe from Zika.
Dr. Austin Jeans, who heads the Zimbabwe medical team to the Rio Olympics, said some athletes from the Southern African nation had raised concerns over the Zika virus, which has led to a number of athletes worldwide withdrawing from the games. Zimbabwe is sending its biggest number of athletes ever to an Olympics, led by a women's soccer team that has qualified for the first time. Some members of the soccer team had threatened to quit over lack of information about the Zika virus. But Jeans, a sports medicine expert, and the Zimbabwe team Rio 2016 compiled what he termed the information bulletin, Zika virus outbreak.
So from a Zimbabwe team situation, we're pretty confident that we have this under control. And should we be successful in both the awareness and the implementation of these measures, I don't believe that the risk is significant at all. And perhaps just finally, I will make you aware that the US Center for Disease Control, which is a World Health Advisory and Research Body, published a report on the 13th of July, which only puts four countries at risk of Zika transmission back to their countries, and we're not one of those.
That is a reference to Chad, Djibouti, Eritrea, and Yemen, which, according to the CDC report, have the highest risk of importing the virus that is carried by a particular type of mosquito. Jeans said the CDC finding had been explained to Zimbabwean athletes, adding that it is winter in Brazil, which makes the mosquito population smaller. The women's soccer team had threatened to quit over lack of information about the Zika virus. Wednesday, one member of the Zimbabwe women's soccer team told VOA the information from the CDC had calmed the athletes and would now go to the Rio Games. Golfers Rory McIlroy, Jason Day and Adam Scott are some of the athletes that have pulled out of the Rio Games, citing fears of contracting the Zika virus. Sebastian Mofu, VOA News, Harare.
Well, the colors that everyone wants to see at the Olympic Games are, of course, bronze, silver, and gold. But it's not just from the medals, it's from the money. Because with ticket sales, hotel reservations, travel, and merchandise, the Olympics can bring a lot of revenue in from around the world. In part three of our four-part series, Sydney Levy, the CEO of the Rio 2016 Olympic Organizing Committee, tells VOA's Carol Castiel about the economics behind the athletics, beginning with ticket sales for the events.
We sold 70% of the tickets so far, 70%. From the 30 that's missing, it's funny, but what's happening is that we're going to hold football matches all around the country in six different cities. And half of those 30% of tickets not sold yet are football, which is funny because Brazil is the land of football. Everybody loves football. So we think people are not buying the football matches because it's too early. It's a Brazilian custom to buy the football matches on the day before or so. So the other 15% of tickets that we didn't sell are the low-demand tickets, traditionally low-demand, like preliminaries. There's some sports that are not popular at all in Brazil, not at all. And so we're making a campaign right now to get those tickets. And the football, at the end, we're going to sell anyway. But right now, we still have 30% of tickets to sell.
And how about foreigners? How have ticket sales gone for those coming outside the country?
You can buy tickets at the website at any time. They're open today. I have a pretty sophisticated website where you can go there, rio2016.com, and you can see over there what is still available, foreigners and Brazilians alike.
Would you say that at this point, would you have expected the games to have been sold out by now had it not been for these many challenges that we've been talking about?
Well, Brazil is not England, or, you know, people take decisions, even really last-minute decisions. That's tradition in Brazil. So we are not expecting since the beginning to have everything sold out at that stage. So we're now starting physical stores. So we didn't have physical stores before. And a lot of people will buy in physical stores, which is happening right now.
Can you update us, Mr. Levy, on the Olympic venues themselves, the opening ceremony in Maracanã Stadium, and also are all the venues pretty much complete, would you say?
Yes, the last one is the Velodrome. It was inaugurated, the last one for cycling.
So that's on schedule.
That was the last one, yes. The one we got more problems was the Velodrome, and it was finally ready.
Well, back to the political and economic backdrop. As we mentioned in the beginning, of course, everybody knows now around the world, President Dilma Rousseff was impeached. She was removed from presidency. She may be facing, you know, charges of administrative misconduct. We have this federal corruption investigation going on, also known as Lava Jato or Operation Car Wash. And now the state of Rio de Janeiro and the city are, for all intents and purposes, broke. So this certainly must have an impact, and not a very favorable one, on your ability to do your job. How does this really handicap your work?
Well, Brazil has three levels of government, federal, state, and the city. And the state is really in very bad shape. But the games are basically done with the city. The games is a city exercise. You need people to protect the streets and, you know, the traffic. And it's very basic city workings. And the city of Rio is not in bad shape. The city of Rio financially is very, very well, which proves that the games was not the cause of the financial troubles that the state and the federal government are facing, because the city kind of protected that and managed to handle that well. In fact, we can even say that the games are bringing hope, because we, for example, we're spending on private money, we raised $2.6 billion, and that money would be elsewhere. If Chicago won that 7 years ago, this money would be in Chicago today, not there. So this is there creating jobs and everything. So we really don't think there's a link between the troubles of the state of Rio that are basically linked to the oil prices and the games. Of course, it's hard. It makes it harder, which is a hard job. It's even harder with all that. But now that we're getting close, we feel ready and nothing can stop us.
Nothing can stop you? Even Dilma's impeachment or problems at the federal level.
We're ready. Okay. Come bring it to me.
Tomorrow we'll have the final segment in our series when Mr. Levy will touch on everything from public enthusiasm, his involvement with the planning, lingering doping allegations, and his hopes for the game's success. Well, the U.S. Army is having an unprecedented success this summer qualifying soldiers to compete at the upcoming Olympic Games in Brazil. The Army supports a core of runners, nearly all from the cradle of distance running champions, Kenya. Tom Bancy reports why the Army is grooming Olympic athletes, several of whom only recently became U.S. citizens.
This year's USA indoor runner-up at 3,000 meters from the U.S. Army, Paul Chelimo.
We're at the crowded start of the men's 5,000-meter race at the U.S. Olympic team trials just held in Eugene, Oregon.
On your marks.
The elite runners at the line mostly wear the brightly colored uniforms of their shoe company sponsors, but there's also a pair of slender guys in beige, black, and camouflage with the word Army in big letters across their chests. Top three qualify for Team USA in a trip to the Summer Olympics. After 12 laps around the track, the race comes down to a furious sprint to the finish. U.S. Army soldier Paul Chelimo finishes in the top three.
I was like, you know what? Let it be what it can be, you know? So I just decided to push.
Chelimo is the fifth Army soldier to make the U.S. Olympic team in track and field. Four of these five followed similar paths to get here. They were born and raised and started running in the highlands of Kenya. They got athletic scholarships to American universities. After college, they enlisted in the U.S. Army, which non-citizens with legal residency may do. Chelimo signed up for 4 years in 2014 with an eye on the Olympics.
Actually, my main goal was to represent the United States, and being an Olympian is the best way to represent the United States. And so as soon as I joined, I knew about Double Cup. And
that being the Army's world-class athlete training program.
That was the best program because I could do my career as a soldier and also focus on my talent, you know.
Military service provides a fast track to U.S. citizenship, and not just for soldier athletes. Normally, a green card holder has to wait 5 years to apply to naturalize. But after the terrorist attacks of 9/11, Congress voted to allow immigrants in the military to apply as soon as they wanted. Because of this, Chelimo and his Kenyan countrymen could and did receive citizenship quickly, in time to compete for a slot on this year's U.S. Olympic team. Shadrach Kipchirchir qualified in the 10,000 meters.
It's not about me. It's all about all the soldiers that sacrificed their life and dedication and hard work. I'm not going to let them down.
The Army's head coach for track and field is a former Olympian himself and a major in the Oregon National Guard on active duty. Dan Brown says there was a good reason for the Army to create a unit where soldiers collect regular pay while focusing on training for upcoming world competitions, such as the Olympics and Paralympics.
They are great ambassadors for the Army. They represent sacrifice, determination, loyalty, commitment, you know, all of our ethos.
It was Brown who convinced his superiors to let some of the Army runners relocate to his hometown of Beaverton, Oregon. That's far from the nearest Army post, but home to Nike World headquarters and a cadre of other professional runners to work out with. Kipchirchir says training at the highest level and attending to Army tasks, like making recruiting appearances, is not easy.
You know, like the Nike athletes, their job is just running. They concentrate on just running. But ours, like soldiers first. We are the soldiers first.
Since the Army established its world-class athlete training program in 1997, 65 soldier athletes have competed at the Olympic and Paralympic Games. This year, the Army is sending a total of 10 athletes to the Summer Games in Brazil, 4 runners, a race walker, 4 marksmen, and 1 competitor in modern pentathlon. In addition, an Army archer and a swimmer qualified for the Paralympic Games for physically disabled athletes, which follow the Summer Games. The Rio-bound crew also includes a newly naturalized champion wrestler from Uzbekistan who is going to the Olympics as an alternate on the U.S. wrestling team. I'm Tom Bonsi in Eugene, Oregon.
An update now on our story from yesterday. After an emergency meeting Tuesday, the International Olympic Committee said that they would delay their decision on whether or not to ban Russia's athletes from the Games over doping allegations. Well, today, Alexander Zhukov, the head of Russia's Olympic Committee, told reporters that the IOC decision is set to be handed down this Sunday, July 24th. Once they do make a decision, we'll be sure to bring it to you here on the Sunny Side of Sports.
If you were to talk to us from the deepest bitter part of the bottom of your heart. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
And a big hello to all of our Facebook Live viewers out there. If you're used to seeing Sonny Young, you may be surprised to see me instead, but don't be alarmed. I'm Andrew Palcheski, but this is still the Sunny Side of Sports. I'll be here for the next week and a half while Sonny's on vacation, and I'm thrilled that you're joining us on Facebook. As a reminder to those listening, if you have internet or cellular access, you can check out our Facebook page for this live video, facebook.com/VOASunny. Joining me now in the studio are Dan Friedel and Jonah Haskell. Both are here to talk about the latest trends in the sport world. Sporty greetings, Dan and Jonah.
Hi, Andrew. I feel like I should be calling this the Andrew side of sports this couple of week period.
I'm just a caretaker. I said we should call it like the partly cloudy side of sports. Like I don't have the same energy as Sunny, but I try to get there at least without coffee. But anyway,
you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you very much, and it's good to have both of you on. Dan, we'll start with you. Tell us what's trending in the sports world. I understand some stuff with Pokemon.
Yeah, Pokemon, the Pokemon Go mobile application is taking North America by storm for sure. Some countries in Europe and Asia also have access to this application, which is a throwback to 20 years ago, the card game that kids played in elementary school in the 1990s. I actually have a friend who told me that he sold his Pokemon collection way back then for $700. So now that it's back in the news, he probably wishes
he should have held on to it for
exactly.
a while. Yeah.
But for anybody who wishes they still had their cards, they can get a kick out of playing this game with their mobile device. They can go around and collect the original Pokemon characters in this augmented reality game, which takes advantage of the GPS location service on your phone, along with the mapping feature on your phone and the camera, so that you can catch these animated characters as if they were in front of you in real life.
And the idea being you have to actually move around to do this. It's not like sitting in front of a video game at home where you just plant it on the, you know, the couch. You actually have to get out and participate in the real world.
One aspect of the game is you have to hatch eggs. The characters arrive in eggs. You don't know what you're going to get. And to incubate the eggs, you have to walk 5 or 10 kilometers before they'll hatch.
Wow. So it's helping people be a little more athletic, maybe through the guise of a video game. And I understand some sports teams are actually using this.
Speaking of athletics, the sports stadiums around the U.S. are taking advantage of this game. Many of the stadiums have these historic locations, like statues of famous players or a timeline of the history of the team, or maybe some interesting sports-themed art installation. So many of those locations are in the game what are called Pokestops, where you can go as a player and you can kind of recharge your batteries. You can get new balls that are used to catch characters and other little pieces, components of the game that can help you get stronger. These Pokestops can also be lures. You pay actual money to turn them into lures. So people can be sitting at a baseball game, for example, and these characters will come to them. So they're at a game for 3 hours. They might catch 30 new Pokemon characters without having to get out of their seats. So it's actually for baseball, you know, nobody ever wants to have a rain delay, but maybe people are rooting for rain delays now.
They'll stay in the park and play some Pokemon. Jonah, I know you've been playing this game. Could you see that application, people doing this at sports stadiums and playing with fans that are around them?
Yeah, I can definitely see that because, you know, you're talking about the aspect where you actually have to get up and go walk around and actually try to find these Pokemon. And that can be kind of annoying because, you know, you're sitting at home. You're not trying to go walk around 10 kilometers. So if you can just go to a stadium and, you know, sit in your seat, watch a game and, you know, have a Charmander walk up to you and you catch it, I would definitely be in favor of that.
Especially at baseball stadiums where there's sometimes a delay, not just because of the weather, but baseball can be a slow sport where you're waiting between innings or you're waiting even between pitches. Sometimes they take a while if they change pitchers, that kind of thing. So that might be a good opportunity to get around. And instead of going to the concession stand, you look for some Pokemon.
Yeah, definitely between innings, you know, like, or even if you're just going to the concession stand, you know, go to get some nachos and, you know, a Pokemon just walks up, you can catch it real quick, and then keep going on with your sporting experience.
And Dan, I know that there's some teams that are even using their stadiums as kind of playgrounds. I don't know what you call it, battlefields. I'm not sure what the terminology would be, but places to engage with other players.
Well, one of the interesting news items that come out of this phenomenon is that people have been getting hurt because they've been tripping over curbs and you know, bumping into things because they're so engrossed in looking at their phones. So if you think of the playing field in a football stadium, 100 yards long, that actually provides a little bit of safety. So some of the universities where they don't have games on their field right now because it's the summer break are opening up their doors to let people come in and chase after these Pokemon characters in a big, expansive, open space. And I think one of those was Texas A&M University that had a photo of like 100 people on the field walking around looking for these characters. One of the other kind of funny things is that, of course, these sports teams like to tease each other, troll each other. So, for example, the University of Wisconsin made a post showing a Pokemon character on its campus, and its rival school, Michigan State University, said, well, Pokemon really like to be here in East Lansing instead. The teams are going back and forth, kind of having some fun with that. So it's another opportunity for these teams to get their names out there in the public eye.
And Jonah, how many sports stars do you think are playing this? Will we see maybe a sports star trip and fall and be on the disabled list because he was playing Pokemon Go?
Hopefully we won't see anyone trip and fall and get injured because of the game. You know, you don't want that to happen to an athlete, but I expect it will happen. I know right now, at least in Major League Baseball, there's a lot of young players who grew up in the 90s, grew up on Pokemon, so they're probably pretty big fans of the game. They probably don't have that much time to play it because, you know, they're traveling and working out and playing games all the time, but they probably, you know, find some time to go out and catch some Pokemon.
Yeah, especially when they're traveling around for their games to different cities. Maybe they'll play with different people, maybe even play with some fans. So if fans are out there, maybe they can watch out and play along with one of their sports heroes.
Who knows? One aspect of the game is that different Pokemon are found in different environments. So, you know, moving around different cities all the time, you can find all different kinds of Pokemon.
Fascinating stuff. Well, thank you very much, Jonah and Dan, for that. That wraps up the July 20th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Kwame Ofori, VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff, And thank you for tuning in on the radio and on Facebook. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, in partnership with Ethiopia's Ministry of Health and implementing partners KNCV Tuberculosis Foundation, Management Sciences for Health, or MSH, and the World Health Organization, celebrated the transition from the Heal TB activity to Challenge TB at a recent event in Addis Ababa. Working closely with the Ministry of Health and the Amhara and Oromia Regional Health Bureaus, USAID's Heal TB activity has helped the ministry to screen more than 16 million people for TB since July 2011. While improving TB services at 1,000 health facilities was the original target, the activity enabled the ministry to expand to all 2,200 health facilities in the two regions. Implemented by MSH, together with its sub-partners Alert, PATH, and the Kenya Association for the Prevention of Tuberculosis and Lung Disease, HEAL-TB significantly strengthened the laboratory network for TB diagnosis and placed more than 250,000 people on treatment. Additionally, USAID created a model multi-drug-resistant program, integrated TB and HIV services, and expanded TB expertise at zonal and local levels. Ethiopia remains among the world's 30 high-burden TB countries, with close to 200,000 new cases estimated each year. Of these, only two-thirds are being identified for treatment. Ethiopia had approximately 1,300 new multi-drug-resistant cases in 2014, with less than 45% treated. The Challenge TB project is expected to substantially contribute to the government of Ethiopia's goal of ending TB throughout the country. It will build upon Heal TB and expand in scope to support the Ministry of Health in nearly all regions of Ethiopia. In alignment with the Health Sector Transformation Plan, Challenge TB will provide decentralized technical assistance to the government of Ethiopia at all levels to improve the quality of TB services, referral links, data, and reporting. It will also emphasize access to TB services by key populations. KNCV Tuberculosis Foundation is the lead implementing partner, with MSH and the World Health Organization substantially involved in project management. As USAID Mission Director Dennis Weller noted, we could not have achieved these results had it not been for our strong partnership and collaboration with the Ministry of Health and regional health bureaus.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
face. NATO see. Hey.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.